This is the Horse Radio Network.
This is episode 604 of the Dressage Radio Show, official podcast of the United States Dressage Federation on the Horse Radio Network, brought to you by ProStride. On tonight's show, we will be joined by author Beth Baumert to talk about her brand new book, How Two Minds Meet. After that, trainer Cassandra Hummert talks about her journey with yoga, and then Reese and I will answer a listener question.
This is Reese Koppler-Stanfield from Loxahatchee, Florida.
And this is Philip Parks from Rockwood, Ontario, and you're listening to the Dressage Radio Show.
Hi, Philip. How are you today?
I'm doing quite well, actually. It's been sunny, and my horses have been good, and everything is fine. So, there.
Awesome. I'm
thinking positive today.
Well, yes, it's winter in Canada, and I don't think I would survive very well in winter in Canada. I can tell you that right now.
Well, yeah. I was just going to say, we are recording a little early this week because you've got some excitement going on.
I do. We are full steam ahead here in Wellington. We had a big show over the weekend in our neighborhood, and we had a bunch of horses go and nice success and things to work on, which was fun. And shout out to my Sarah Turi. She's my assistant / we call her the horse's nanny. And she got her scores at first level for her bronze medal on Shannon Caparella's Turi, which was really exciting. Big Mike got to knock some dust off in the St. George, which was good. He needed to do that. And this week I am competing in my first CDI in 11 years. So I'm really looking forward to taking Bingo out. So we are recording early because our normal recording time, I hopefully will be in the ring, which is pretty exciting.
Well, we're going to wish you all the best success and hope that you have a great time.
Yeah, I'm really excited. And just to be in that ring again, and I've never ridden in the Global Stadium, so to be able to do that, it's going to be amazing. And I'm just so pleased with this horse, Bingo. I feel like we're gonna talk about How Two Minds Meet, the book by Beth Baumert. And you know, when you start to have a really special relationship with a horse, it's so cool. So I really feel like I'm getting that with this horse, and I can't wait to sort of show him off and get out there. So that should be really fun. So I'll let you guys know how it goes, but things are really different than they were 11 years ago. I mean, just how you enter and there's a lot of different steps. So it should be a really fun week, a bit of a learning curve for me and my team. But I have the best coach. Scott Hassler is amazing. And he has been so good about telling me all the things. So it should be really fun. So I'm looking forward to it. So hopefully I'll have really good news next week for sure.
That would be fantastic. So what do we got on our radio show today?
Yes, we have great guests. We're going to have a quick break from ProStride and come back with our author of our book club of the month, Beth Baumert.
ProStride is the all-natural solution for lameness. It uses the power of your horse's own blood to relieve pain, reduce inflammation, and improve mobility to keep them sound. ProStride can be completed stallside by your veterinarian in just 20 minutes with no need for trailering. ProStride is backed by years of science and success stories. Olympians to pleasure riders, trainers, horse owners, and their veterinarians trust the improved performance and lasting results reported with a single injection. No series, no daily supplements, and no monthly regimen. When every stride counts, demand the difference they deserve. Ask your vet about ProStride. Learn more at ProStride.com.
Well, we are so very excited to announce our new book club of the month book. We have tonight Beth Baumert, the author of How Two Minds Meet, The Mental Dynamics of Dressage. Beth is a USDF certified instructor, L graduate with distinction, and she's the president and CEO of the Dressage Foundation and also one of my personal mentors. Beth, welcome to the show.
I'm so happy to be here, Reese.
Thank you so much. I was so excited when we all decided that we would pick your book again. We did your first book many years ago now. I think it may have been our first selection to our book club program, which has turned out to be, turned out to be quite a fun program here on our show. And I think we all enjoy it. And Philip and I really enjoy getting the books. So Beth, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you decided to write the book.
Well, I think the book began with the other book, When Two Spines Align. And where did that begin? That, I don't know. There's a kind of magic about horses. And I think all of us have that. Well, we remember that seed of an obsession with horses, the wonder of it and the smell of it. And I don't know, the power of it and the rhythm of it. And most people have memories like that. Later, we get hooked for a different reason, I think. This is just my personal opinion. But I think that horses require that we use all parts of our minds. We're thinkers by nature, but horses don't just invite us to use other dimensions of the mind. They really require it. So actually, I'm sort of ahead of myself because the first book began because of my position with Dressage Today. In 1994, Dressage Today started, and for 25 years, I had the wonderful job of being able to call anybody in the world and say, you know, I noticed that you're really good at whatever. Mm-hmm. How do you do that? So after 25 years of being able to call people all over the world, that first book wasn't a choice. I had a seriously compulsive need to chronicle everything I learned from all those super, super generous people. It's amazing how people in this sport are so generous. But that book is about physics. It's really, how boring is that?
No, it's really good. It's a great book, and we have highlighted it already. And I think of the vertical power lines every time I ride. So I'm just saying that it's an amazing book, and everyone should read it. I'm like, I think of it every day myself.
Yeah, we had great feedback on it when we did it for the show, and I personally enjoyed reading it. And it's one of those books you can go back to and just, you know, you can pick. You don't have to read the whole thing, and you know, front to back, and it's got great sections in it that you can refer to or that you can talk about, and it really helps those of us who are kind of educators and need ideas about how to teach people things. I mean, that's been the great part about this whole book club to begin with, is that, you know, as a rider you can process things, but as a teacher you can also have more and more tools. And I think, you know, dressage riders and competitors just love to learn. I mean, you know, we go to clinics and, you know, we watch other people learn for 8 hours and we come home excited. Like, I think that's a little bit crazy in itself.
It's true. We don't find it boring. We find technique and physics somehow very exciting because it helps us communicate better with the horses.
Yeah.
But I remember decades ago, it was decades ago, Kathy Conley saying to me, someday riders will become so skilled physically that contests will be won by the heart and the mind. Honest to goodness, she said that decades ago, and I will never forget it. So the first book couldn't have been the only book because it is sort of, it's concrete and it's physical. It's not about the magic and the wonder of it and the fascinating parts. So I had to because of what Kathy said, but also because I found that, of course, she was right, that you have to talk about the heart and the mind and how we can harmonize with horses mentally and emotionally, as well as physically.
I'd just like to jump in here and say, you know, give props to the horse breeders who have bred such fantastic animals and who are also so physically gifted. I feel like, you know, every time I start a three-year-old and the genetics have just advanced so far that you don't even have to ask them questions. Just so capable and talented from birth that, you know, just to reiterate the point, it's about gelling with their personalities and their minds as well.
Wow, that's an incredibly important point, though, because in terms of the physics of it, it's not just the physics of the rider, but physics of the horse and how the horse and the rider work together physically. But you're so right. Horses are being bred now to be physically ideal to do this, so that the aid applied is far more likely to get the right result because of the horse's body and also his mind too, right? That I think that's what you're saying. That,
yeah. More, in good temperament and in good athleticism. They're just more willing and more capable, along with the riders who are starting early and earlier in their education.
Like, yes, that's
true. The specialization of dressage riders begins at 13 years old or so. It's incredible how far the sport is coming along.
It's very, very exciting.
Yeah.
And the horse's mind, I mean, the intelligent horse is really quick to understand, and the horse with fine character is really willing to comply. And sometimes those things are hard to separate. But anyway, it's all very interesting. The title of the book refers to the minds of the horse and the mind of the horse and the mind of the rider. When I say two minds, but actually, this was actually a little confusing to write. Oddly enough, it doesn't seem like it should have been now. But the rider also has two minds, one that the horse can read and one that the horse cannot read. So the normal thinking, left brain, filing system, accumulating knowledge, that's what we do, isn't it? That humans are thinkers, and he who is the best at thinking often gets rewarded in this life. But the left brain is the one that the horse cannot read. And it's one that we still need to pay very, very close attention to, it because what we learn with our left brain, we can apply, right, to the mind that he can read. So think of how horses are when you're grooming him. And is he thinking about anything? Is he thinking about yesterday's mishap? No. He's in the now. He's just in the present. So there are other aspects of his nature that we need to put ourselves in that same zone, that non-thinking, meditational, prayerful. When you think of it, if you're in this non-thinking zone and maybe your mind is reaching out, maybe in prayer, or some people call it prayer, or reaching out to communicate with your horse, or it can be inward, can be kind of meditative. But the non-thinking mind is the one that he can read. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's where he is. And when you're in the zone, somewhere in the book, there's a picture of Sue Blinks at the Olympics in Sydney. And you can tell from the look on her face, she's in another world. She's just in the zone. And the zone, athletes, all kinds of athletes, aspire to be in the zone, right? Because that's where inexplicable results occur. Very high achievement in the zone. You click into another area. Now, the basketball doesn't really help you. I mean, basketball doesn't care. It's blood and bone, and it's this feeling sensitive critter that requires that we be in the now, that we're present, that we're absolutely present. And there are other qualities that he has too, such as you must be positive. If you tell him what not to do, chances are really good that you'll get what you don't want. So
No, it makes sense too, because, you know, like you said, to play at a basketball, you know, the basketball doesn't think, but your other players do, you know, on a team, but you can, there's other ways of communicating with their verbal communication and that kind of thing with a teammate, but a horse, that's not a, you know, really, we theoretically can't use verbal communication. So you have to find other ways to communicate with the horse in the present so they understand the zone, but also I'm sure, you know, it comes from training and, but all that can happen. And I think, it, you know, if you've gone to a competition and it works and you find that zone, you're like, oh my gosh, like that test was so good compared. I kind of had experience over the weekend, you know, the day before.
You did?
My horse, my horse is a little young, you know, he was a little nervous and a little young, and I kind of had to kind of help him out a little bit. And then the next day he came in and he was, we were in a different place and it was awesome. And it was like, okay, how do you explain that really from one day to the next? But you know, that, and it is also doing it and repetition and all the other things that, that kind of help you get into the zone. I probably came in and rode a little differently, right? Because I had had the experience the day before myself. And this is a horse I've had a long time. So it's not a new partnership. Yeah. It's a pretty old partnership. So, you know, it is, it is, you know, as you come and, you know, I rode through mentally that test that I had, I showed on Friday, and I rode through it in my mind and I watched the video and I talked to my coach and, you know, and all of those things to sort of help us sort of meet together. And so I can understand, like, that's why I started reading the book last night and I thought, I can't wait to finish this book, because this is what we're doing sort of all the time, is like, how do I make myself more present and be that much better of a partner for my horse? So it's a fascinating book, and sort of the idea of sort of the mental component is something that we, all of us as riders, need to, because it's so hard to be like, well, you know, I'm going to finish this ride and then I have homework and things to do with my children and make dinner and clean the house. And
well, you're that,
I think that comes into it, right, as well.
It does come into it. And that the horse's persistent lesson is that you just come to the saddle with these positive attributes that put you in the zone. Other sports, as you said, you don't have that inborn coach.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you have to really, it's a trained thing. And even ride, I think all of us, you're three professional riders here. We're all, this is something we teach every day. We work on every day. It's hard. it's not an easy thing.
Right. Well, most of us teach the physical part. And this other part, it's so interesting to me how you as trainers can, I'm sure you've had countless students, and you can see that some of them progress tremendously and others may have the same advantage or comparable advantages and they don't progress. And it's just, and maybe they don't, maybe that's not their goal, actually. You know, some people just ride because they want the pleasure of being able to relax after a tough job at work. But I think amongst the riders, the students who want to excel, they vary tremendously. And it's, I think no one can say why, but this book taps into 100 possibilities.
The people who kind of do the best know how to tap into that being in the zone, you know, to take the hour that they're having a lesson or the hour that they're going to ride their horse. You've got to let, you know, you've got to let the external stuff and the home stuff and whatever, just, you got to find a way to put that all away and sort of, and take the, you know, because I think this is a common thing that some people kind of overanalyze while they're doing it. So they're in their own head a little bit too much, rather than just to just focus, feel, react, and analyze afterwards. You know, I have a ton of students, and there's nothing wrong with, you know, doing it, and then, and when it's not going well, to stop and to talk about it. But there can be a little too much of that, rather than saying, you know, how to focus on your horse, how to focus on yourself, and just try and do it for a little bit, give it some good efforts, 100% of yourself, and hopefully you can kind of push through the problem without some things you can't just put your finger on and say, oh, there's the problem, or that's what I should do. Right. You're learning to ride and feel and get your horses focused. So I find that some people who take a little bit too many breaks, the horse becomes very unfocused because the rider is busy analyzing and talking to their coach and having this conversation, which is great. Mm-hmm. Which is great, but the horse goes, what's over there? Oh, why did we stop? Oh, I don't know. And I'm just wandering around. And then you know, everybody gears back to go back at doing it. And then kind of sometimes the moment is lost where, you know, a quick correction or quick something can help the horse to understand better in the moment. It's all about that in the moment focused kind of riding. Those are my thoughts.
Well, you bring up a super interesting point because there's communication between the student and the instructor. But then there's the very important, arguably most important, communication between the horse and the rider. And that means the rider has to have this element of wonder, just a listening attitude. So that I like to think of that circle of energy that's in physically, but then it's also mental that you think and then you receive, you listen and then you speak. It's like a conversation, right? Wondering is the basis of all good conversation. Oh, I wonder what. So anyway, there is a lot of communicating going on, and most instructors know that the primary communication needs to be between the horse and the rider. And they expect to need to repeat themselves.
Well, Beth, it's a fascinating book. It's such an amazing topic. And can you tell our listeners again the title of the book and where we can find it? And if they have any questions to reach you, how can they do all of those things?
The name of the book is How Two Minds Meet. It's a Trafalgar Square book, Horse and Rider Books. And it's also on Amazon.
Fantastic. And we love Trafalgar Square Horse and Rider Books. They've been such a great partner with us, and they make all this happen. They've been so fantastic. Beth, we can't thank you enough for your time, and we'd love to have you back on again to keep talking about it. Yes, When Two Minds Meet, The Mental Dynamics of Dressage by Beth Baumert for our Book Club of the Month book.
Thank you, everyone.
This Nutrition Minute is brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products, the company that simplifies your search for research-proven nutritional supplements at kppusa.com.
The horse that matters to you matters to Kentucky Performance Products. Researchers have confirmed that as horses age, they naturally become less sensitive to insulin and more susceptible to health problems caused by too much sugar in the diet. One way to reduce the sugar content in a horse's diet is to replace sugar-laden grains with a high-fat supplement. Fat is an extraordinary energy source. It is readily utilized by the horse and contains more than 2 times the calories of sugary grains. Equijoule Stabilized Rice Bran is an excellent fat supplement. It contains a balanced calcium to phosphorus ratio and won't cause mineral imbalances when added to the diet. Its all-natural ingredients are high in healthy fat and fiber. Best of all, Equijoule allows owners to easily replace the calories previously supplied by sugary grains. When you need to add healthy calories to your horse's diet, choose Equijoule. To learn more, visit Kentucky Performance Products at kppusa.com.
Tonight, I am so happy to have Cassandra Hummert Johnson on the show. She's an FEI rider and trainer and now a yoga instructor. Cassie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Reese. Thanks for having me.
It's been a couple years, but you have been on the show before. I love having you.
I love coming on the show and speaking with you guys.
Well, you know, we were talking we've been talking a lot about doing yoga together here in Florida, because obviously it's a safe activity. We can do it outside. The weather is usually pretty cooperative when it comes to yoga. So you and I have been talking a lot about it. But Phil and I, as we were organizing this show, you know, rider fitness is really something that's important. And we've done as a community, we did the dressage rider training program. There's so many workouts available online. I personally My favorite workout is yoga. So when you got certified, I was so excited to work with you. And so tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got certified, and how you think it's really good for riders.
Yeah, so I have always enjoyed yoga in some capacity, whether that be at the fitness center down the road that's sort of geared towards everyone, or maybe a class that is, you know, maybe geared towards people that are more advanced. But I always enjoy going. Like, I give it my best go. And you know what really sparked my interest is a client of mine, a friend, she said, "Hey, come to this class. It's going to be hard, but I think you should come." And I thought, oh no, I don't know. I went with her. It was a hot yoga class. It was a flow class, and it was really challenging. And I left that class and said, I don't think I can do this anymore. And she said, "Just keep coming with me, please. Like, just keep coming with me." And I went to a few of those classes, and you know, over the next 3 months, all of a sudden I could do this stuff. And I was really thinking, wow, here I've just witnessed what everybody talks about, you know, that you'll see progress, that yoga will make you more flexible. It'll give you strength. You'll feel better about yourself. You'll want to go. And that was really inspiring because I was the perfect example of someone that says, oh no, not for me. And here I am 3 months later going to these pretty hard yoga classes. And I thought, there's got to be something here that I can take away. And I really appreciated the way the instructor approached this class. And, you know, he was very kind. He was challenging. He helped me. He never said to me, "I think this is too much for you." And I thought, I'm going to go learn how to teach these classes. I think that will help me with teaching riding, right? So I signed up for an immersive program, a live-in program, which was exciting. And I came away with the 200-hour yoga teacher training certification, which is a internationally recognized certification. And I learned a lot during that. And I now feel like I have one more, you know, tool in my toolbox to help both my riders and myself, and try to pass on these things that I learned from a very organic place. I am not, you know, super, super, super into yoga. I love how it helps me. And I just want other people to realize, hey, it can really help you too.
So maybe you could tell us a little bit more specifically what you can take from your yoga teacher training to dressage rider training, because it seems like you've kind of done a working student position in both.
Yeah, exactly. And I think one of the things I took away the most, and I continue to realize as I teach both riding yoga, is that there are modifications for everything. There's never a situation where someone should feel like they can't do what is being asked at all. And I think that that's important with the riding too, right? I mean, yeah, you can't ask a first level horse to all of a sudden, let's be a Grand Prix horse and expect it to tee off. However, there's little exercises, right? Let's just work on, you know, turn on the haunches a little tiny bit. And that's wonderful. Good job today. And I think in yoga, the same thing. There are some challenging postures and challenging poses, but I like that doing the teacher training, that you learn how to teach people of every level. You teach modifications. If you can't, you know, if you can't do, for example, tree is a common yoga pose where you stand on one leg, basically like a flamingo. And if you don't have the balance to do that, that's okay. You teach a modification where you keep one foot on the ground and you rest the other foot on the ground and just bring the heel up. And that's absolutely fine. And now you can include everyone in the class. And I think that's important. You know, everyone wants to feel included. And that's something that I really took away from this experience is, how do I include everybody? How do I teach everybody? I don't want to feel like I only cater to a certain group.
Yeah. And I think that's so right on, because in training riders and horses, we all have challenges. We all have things that, you know, that make it difficult, or maybe we need to change, or as an instructor, maybe saying it a different way is important. And one of the things that I found with yoga that has been really helpful for me as a rider, not just the flexibility, but it's really watching the alignment of what I'm doing. I think that's really been critical, because I didn't realize, you know, when you're doing something on the mat, and I've done a lot of online yoga right now because of the pandemic, and the teacher says, oh, watch your hip. And I'm like, oh my. I found kind of the same thing when I'm riding and teaching. It's like, oh, watch that piece of the alignment. That'll fix the whole thing or help. And I think that that's been something that I've been able to take away from the experience as well, is just, wow, you know, can you elaborate a little bit on that as well?
Yeah, of course. So in the teacher training, that's obviously something you do work on a lot, is how do you approach your students in a class and be able to continue teaching the rest while you adjust one? And how do you approach that student that needs the adjustment without, you know, bringing any kind of, you don't want to feel like you're scolding anybody. And I think that that's something that you learn a little bit by doing. And with the alignment in yoga, it is important for some postures, poses more than others, but it's important. If you want the full benefit from the yoga class, you should try to do these things, you know, to the best of your, not only your ability, but physically what is considered most correct for your posture and for your strength and for your flexibility training. And it's no different than it is in riding. I think a lot of it comes down to the way that you approach your students. If it's always in a way that seems, you know, you're doing this wrong, why are you doing this wrong again? That's not always helpful. I mean, sometimes it's helpful, but it's not always helpful. And I think in yoga too, you don't want to make anybody feel like you know, you told me I'm not quite aligned, now I can't do it. I think that's what, you know, we all try to do as teachers is learn how to help our students in the best way. Alignment is super important in yoga. Alignment is super important in the riding. And I try to learn more about the best way to teach that every day. And, you know, it's not just alignment. I think when you think about the effect that your alignment has with your fitness in general, if usually your alignment is not so great because it's an area that maybe you're tight. If you think about posture, you know, none of us, apparently, according to the scientists, none of us stand up straight. And that's true. We don't. We slouch around and we, you know, whatever, look at our phone and sit in the car and all these things. But you do that because it's comfortable. It feels uncomfortable to do it sort of, quote, the right way. So I think that you find that the more times you do it the right way, whether it's guidance from the TV yoga or from a yoga class or, you know, what have you, I think you find the more that you, you know, correct yourself and you do it the right way, the better it gets and the better you feel. And, you know, how true is that with riding too? When you start to correct these things and you go, oh, you know, oh my gosh, it's so easy now. And I think that's sort of the beauty of it, of having an instructor, and they don't have to physically be there, but when they are there, they can obviously help you a bit more in person with making corrections. Obviously on the TV, you get corrections, but maybe it feels a little impersonal, but still any step in that direction is so helpful.
Well, and I think just what the changes it helps in your body too. You know, I think a lot of us are really tight in our hips because we sit a lot, and, you know, just being able to work on some of those things that are sort of opposite of what you would be working on in the saddle has been, for me, incredibly helpful. And I have seen my body change and get more flexible, and by no means am I a yogi master, but, you know, what was difficult when I started the journey really got going last January. And, you know, I do some form of yoga every day now. And it also helps just with anxiety and, you know, when the world is falling apart, you know, it gives you other strategies too, that I think are really helpful.
I really like that you said that, Reese, because whether it's riding or doing yoga. I also do it. And it's about, you know, both really need to, you know, put other problems or other issues or other thoughts to one side and really just take the time that you're riding. Maybe that's half hour or the time that you're participating in yoga, and just focus on what you can control and, you know, and your breathing and those kinds of things. Is it's not only a body workout, but also a mental relaxer or a mental de-stress. And that's what I really like about the focus, because you can't get on a horse and ride around and improve the horse or improve yourself and your position, all those things, if you're thinking about other things. Or if you're not starting from a place of relaxation, you're going to bring that tension into the horse. You're going to have a bad ride. I've done it. I still do it every once in a while, and it's problematic. But again, you know what the yoga and what the dressage riding does is say, first, focus on what you're doing. Let everything else go. You've planned this half hour. You've got it booked in your schedule. Just be in the arena, or just be here. And I really need that. So
yeah,
it's been great.
It's been great. Well, fantastic. Well, Cassie, we love hearing from you. We love hearing how the journey has helped in a lot of ways with your riders. So how can our listeners find you online?
I can be found online on Instagram at Wellington Yoga. And I can also be found for the dressage at Lavendel Dressage, LAVENDEL, also at lavendeldressage.com. I'm based in Cleveland, Ohio, and down here in Wellington during the winter.
Fantastic. Well, I can't wait for our classes, and we'll post on our Facebook page so everybody can see us working down here.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. I'm really looking forward to it, sharing the things that I've learned. And I'm excited to see how people can incorporate yoga into their structure and their schedule down here. Wellington is such a great time to work on all these things and to create a plan for yourself and your horse. And I think that doing this yoga is an integral part of that now.
And now a quick word from EcoGold Saddle Pads. No slipping, no sliding, no problem. EcoGold Secure Saddle Pads are engineered to keep the horse's back comfortable while keeping the saddle in place for a safe, competitive ride. They have impact protection through the seat, and the ultra-thin flaps provide the rider with better communication and a more stable riding position. Available in both English and Western styles, shop the entire collection at ecogold.ca.
Well, Phil, one of the amazing thing about the Total Saddle Fit GRS, because right now we are in two very different climates. Here in Florida, today was actually close to 90, and I think the humidity was 99%. It was really humid and really hot. So, you know, we've got sweaty horses and we're hosing everything. I mean, they're just coming in dripping. So, you know, to have the ability to use the shoulder relief girths with the different and the stretch deck girths, we're able to use the liners, the neoprene liners that we can hose off. And that's amazing. And in Canada, obviously right now, that's not what you're using.
We got the fleece liners going at the moment. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Actually, it really helps the horses because, you know, they have they're all clipped up, right? And, you know, the hair rubs off a little easier when they're clipped. So I like to put them in the fleece liners to prevent that from happening, because we got to keep them comfortable. And the shoulder relief girths do that awesome, you know, and that we can switch the liners. And then, you know, what I like is to put them in when we go to shows, is actually put them in the leather liners, you know, over the summer. So it just helps keeping the girths looking nice for the shows and being comfortable during the different seasons. The product is just awesome.
Yeah, it's a great product. And again, depending, you know, on what season and where you are, you have so many different options. And it's also a really economical way to do things. So we really thank Justin at Total Saddle Fit for providing such a great product. We both use them every day, all day long. And I'm not, as we know, I'm not particularly nice to that product. I mean, I hose them off and I do clean them every day. But we really can't thank Justin enough for a great product and all the other products at TotalSaddleFit.com.
This week's dressage training tip is brought to you by Total Saddle Fit, home of the shoulder relief girth at totalsaddlefit.com.
So Phil, we've got a total saddle fit training tip, a question from one of our listeners. What you got for us?
Yes, this came through onto the Facebook page. And so I have to thank Tamika for sending her question. She has an off-the-track thoroughbred who is very talented and started playing with flying changes. The problem now is that they've lost the counter canter, which she intends to be showing at second level. So she needs the counter canter. What is she going to do?
Yeah. Okay. So this is actually, this is one I deal with all the time. So Tamika, thank you so much for your question. This is actually a really, you're maybe not going to like my answer, but I also deal with this a lot with my event horses because my event horses are competing sort of second, third level, the advanced to an intermediate, and they will bounce back and forth between the two levels. So it's sort of like, you know, third level to second level. And I will tell you, it's probably one of the most difficult things to coach because truly when you want to teach changes, I think, and personally, it takes at least 6 months. And there's a lot of phases in teaching changes. And so sometimes you do lose the counter canter. I mean, this is my experience, Phil. You may have a very different one, but you may lose the counter canter. So when I am teaching a horse changes, if at all possible, I try to get a block of time where I know maybe I'll lose the counter canter. And then once the horses are a little bit more clear and the aid that I'm asking, then I'm able to keep the counter canter a little bit more. So that's kind of my answer. It's a complicated answer. And I will tell you, it happens with every horse because horses are learning, they need that chance. And once they sort of know changes and until they're sort of very clear in what you're asking, sometimes the counter canter does regress a little bit. Sometimes I will tell people, you know, they need to be, you know, what's the goal? Is the goal third level or is the goal second level? And sometimes if the horses are really struggling with it and they're really doing well with the changes, I will move them right to third level. That's my, sometimes if somebody really, really wants to do second level, I maybe hold off in teaching the changes. So that's something we do, especially with the event horses, we don't have that option, right? So we trudge forward and we try to be I try to make sure that my riders are very clear with their aids. And sometimes I'll take their stirrups away. I don't want the horses bucking in the changes, obviously. Yeah, because if you take your stirrups away, then you really are making sure that the rider is clear with their aids. Because if you shift your seat at all with a horse that knows changes, right, then you have technically, you may not know you're shifting your seat, but if you do shift your seat, say that quickly, then the horse does the change. You can't be angry with that horse because it technically the horse was listening and they did what you wanted. So that also happens sort of in that time frame to make sure that you're really clear with your aids and that your legs are good. So Phil, what is your take on this?
it's such a funny thing because, you know, I think back on, you know, how I teach the changes, whatever, and I use some sugar in at this part of the training as well. So it's so funny. The horse is like going around and counter canter and then does a change and then actually might stop and look for some sugar. So that's why I think it's just really funny. Cause I mean, the horses are really, really trainable. And I think really, really trainable to treats and they're just like, I'm good now. Right. And then they're looking for that sugar. Cause normally I would teach a change, they get it successful. I would stop them, give them a pat. Here's some mm-hmm. sugar, you know, whatever, stuff like mm-hmm. that. Right.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they're like, well, I did a change. I don't get any sugar. I have to keep cantering or, you know, like, and then it's kind of a very confusing time, you know, mm-hmm. in the training kind of thing. But I mean, in some horses, you know, in 4 weeks, you can teach them a change. And in the next 12 weeks, you teach them not to do that.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, only do it when I ask or only do it when I do this certain sequence of events or in this place in the arena, you know, and that kind of thing. It can be very frustrating for horse and rider. What I try to do is figure out a pattern in which they're going to hold the lead. So, I mean, for the different horses, it's different, you know, and I'm trying to, you know, what helps a lot is if I'm using a lot of leg yield. So if I've taught the change on a diagonal, for instance, and they just keep doing it, what I would do is leg yield along that diagonal a little bit. So as long as they're going a little bit sideways and forward, the tendency for the horse to flip the lead is going to be less lessened. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I try and do the counter canter along, you know, around a circle, and, you know, and just keep praising them as they're cantering. And so horses find it hard to kind of flip a lead on a curve line. And then I just take that curve line onto, you know, if I do the circle in the middle of the arena, and then I just take them a little bit along, you know, take them from the circle to the long side to some straight line, and then start circling again before they have a chance to change the lead. Then I'm sort of, you know, praising them and patting through that kind of stuff. So, you know, circle to circle, or, you know, on serpentine, it kind of depends, you know, where and how you've trained the change. And to train the counter canter back again by doing a different line, so the horse understands, yeah, okay, well, on in that way I do a flying change, and when I'm being ridden in this way, then I don't do a flying change. And then the rider can do exactly like you said, Reese. You got to be super, super quiet, mm-hmm, and really to sit on one seat bone, maybe even a little bit extra, to be thinking going away from the seat bone of the lead that you're trying to hold. And just, yeah, it takes time, especially if you're riding a thoroughbred. You know, a lot of your adventurers will be riding thoroughbreds, and thoroughbreds, mm-hmm, that probably know the change from the jumping coursing.
That's right.
Courses anyways. It just takes,
which they don't
really
have to be clean, right? They just need to get, right, to the other lead. So once you have it, to start, yeah, staying, oh, come on, now it has to be a clean change. That becomes a different subject altogether,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just really meticulous attention to detail, and mm-hmm, you're going to have to be, you know, walk canter, walk canter, walk canter a lot again. You know, you probably were doing that already as you're approaching the second level work, and then you teach a change and you think, oh, I'm done with walk canter. Oh, isn't that great? And this is so fantastic. And now, but now you have to go back and do it again to unteach the change, so that when the horse throws in a flying change when you don't want it, you have a tool to come back to walk again and to pick up the lead that you wanted. In a quiet way, not in a punishing way, but in a quiet way, pick up the lead that you want and carry on along whatever line. So the walk canter transitions become a correction in this case, rather than teaching in walk canter. It's now like, okay, you have to do it because I didn't like that you're doing changes whenever you feel like. So
yeah,
again, you know, just meticulous balance, meticulous attention to the detail of your seat and your legs and your hands, all those things, and then start unteaching the change again. And then you're going to teach it again, but only when you want, and that kind of thing, and being really precise about where and when the change has to occur.
Yeah. It's definitely a difficult time. It's a confusing time.
Yeah, I mean, it's great if you it's fantastic to have a horse that's really keen about it, because
yes, yeah, you don't want to punish them.
The other way, I think, is a little more difficult. That a horse that loves the counter canter too much, mm-hmm, and doesn't like to come off the lead can be, you know, in my experience, a little bit more problematic than a horse that's keen and wants to do it and shows you that he can do it. I love that kind of horse.
Yeah, me too. It's having a keen horse is actually a good thing. You just have to train them. You have to be sensitive to the training, you know? Yeah. Yeah. At the end of the day, that's actually what you want, but it's hard to tell them like, no, don't do that. So we wish you luck. Know that literally everybody has this problem. This is not don't think, oh gosh, this is just me. This is.
Oh, one extra thing, Reese, extra thing. You can train it to a voice aid, you know?
I don't know. That makes me nervous.
Oh, you can train it to a voice aid and then take away the voice when you've got it more solid.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a more deliberate aid for the flying change, and it can work out okay.
Okay. All right. I trust you. I've never done it that way, but you know, you never know. Fellow, I love it.
I don't have a tendency to train anything from a voice aid, but you know, you can have some very, very nervous horses and you just, mm-hmm, you know, pick a word or whatever and just, you know, say now and then praise them. And then that helps them to understand that when they don't hear the voice,
yeah, that's true.
They should learn that they shouldn't do the change. And then that can help some riders to just sort of sort out voice with their leg aids and their mm-hmm, seat aids as well. It's an option. It's not like the first option, but if you're having trouble, you can.
Good suggestion. I love it. Well, awesome. And especially for the hot-blooded thoroughbred types. That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. Phil, you're so smart. Well, as always,
the things don't always work, but every once in a while, Something does.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to listen.
Get creative,
I hope everyone listens to us training. And when we had our segment with Patty Mayer, sometimes training horses, you have to get a little creative and it's okay. Truly trainers. This is the conversations we have when we all get together over some wine is like, so tell me you had this horse. How did you do it? Like, what do you think about this horse? Like at the end of the day, it's what works is successful. So
it's, yeah, it's I mean, if thing. If it's a step towards getting, you know, getting what you want, and if it helps the horse to learn it in a more relaxed fashion, I think that's always good, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at the end of the day, what works is it makes you a genius. But sometimes you try things, right? And it doesn't work.
Sometimes it doesn't work. Yeah, exactly. Sometimes it doesn't work and you got to figure it out. And that's why, you know, reset it's 6 months, but I think it's a year before you have confirmed changes and confirmed counter.
And every horse is different. Literally, you know, like a big Mike, I struggled. And then one day he's like, oh, I do it this way. And from then on, his changes are a highlight. It was the weirdest thing. I was like, what happened from Tuesday to Wednesday? Like, how did you literally one day he just knew how to do it. And I'd been working on almost a year and he just Monday was great. Now it's a highlight. It's crazy. And literally, I mean, you can get anywhere close to the rhythm and he does it while other ones have been different. So it just depends. It just depends. And that's not always the answer you like to give, but it's the truth. But I love it. Well, as always, everybody, we hope you enjoyed that trainer segment, our total saddle fit tip of the week. And we love email and Facebook shout outs. Keep us on our toes. Phil and I love it. We love questions that we get to talk about. And sometimes we even talk about them continually off the air. We're kind of dorky that way. So we love it. Well, as always, you can find our show notes and links to today's guests on our website, dressageradio.com. Like us on Facebook, just search Dressage Radio Show. Follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio. My website is maplecrestfarmky.com and my email is reese@horseradionetwork.com.
I think the best way to find me is through Facebook or my email is philip@horseradionetwork.com. I'd like to thank our sponsors for allowing us to put on a good show. That's ProStride, Kentucky Performance Products, EcoGold, and Total Saddle Fit. Don't forget to check out all the other shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com.
Everybody, keep your heels down and your shoulders back, and we can't wait to talk to you next week.